Hey, gang. Welcome to the show. Welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN.com. It's got a website and it's got a donate page. You know what to do. Today is Monday, and Monday means Mark Collette, the leader of the British Goyim, is here on our show. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, and thank you for that excellent intro. I've been promoted. I am now leader.
That's right. No, you had always been a British author and activist on David Duke's website, but you have been promoted to leader of the British Goyim. But yeah, you've been getting you've been getting around a lot lately. You've been on American politicians' Twitters. I guess you retweeting is the word. I don't tweet, so I don't know. But you've been.
You need to start tweeting, Patrick.
Huh?
You need to start tweeting.
Well,
I'm very disappointed at your lack of twittering. You're an intelligent man. You should be drip feeding your beads of knowledge into the Twitter sphere.
Okay, I'll think about that. you've been on the very prominent YouTube live stream show, The Public Space, with Jean-François Gariepi. And you're becoming a fixture on that, as a matter of fact.
I really enjoy working with him. JF is one of those people that's a joy to work with. He's very funny. He's very laid back. He's got a natural affinity to hosting. He's a natural host.
He is.
And he brings a lot to the table. And genuinely, it's always been a real pleasure. It's when you go on with him, you know you're going to have a good time. You know that he's going to really, you know, produce a very good show. Very good, very entertaining, very slick. And yeah, I'm a big fan. A big fan. And he's one of those shows. I appear on a lot of different channels, but JF is one of those content producers whose channel that I don't just appear on, but I do regularly watch as well. He's an entertaining guy.
Yeah. Oh, he is a very big asset for our movement and our people. So very happy about that. You'll be on with Dr. Duke. Is that Wednesday evening?
It is. It'll be very late for me. I will literally be on an intravenous drip of Red Bull. I cannot. My show's on earlier, which you will obviously be on as well. So I will literally be all chatted out.
Okay. Yeah, I know the Wednesday is a long day for me as well. Now, last Wednesday, we had on Richard Spencer, and we wound up talking about that on this show the next day quite a bit.
Yeah, Richard was phenomenal as well on that show. He really is someone who can put together some great points on the fly. He's a really, really good commentator. I enjoy working with him. And that's been seen, I think, about 20,000 times now.
You know, I asked Dr. Duke, I don't remember if it was on the air or off the air, but I asked him, actually, I think it was on this show. He was on the show a week or two ago. Does he find that he's been doing this for 50 years, and does he find that we're having a just kind of like a burst of all these new people, you know, relatively new, younger people, who are making an impact? I mean, is this a break from the past in terms of having all of this talent?
Yes and no. I'd say yes and no on this one.
He answered in the affirmative, but what would you think?
Nationalism. I've been doing this for 18 years, so for a start, I'm not somebody who's really new to this. I've spent almost the entirety of my adult life doing this, which is, you know, quite rare, really, because the unfortunate thing is we have always attracted a large number of young and very, very enthusiastic people. However, and this is the problem that we as a group have always faced, and that is that despite taking in an awful lot of very, very enthusiastic, very, very good people who have an absolute ton of energy. Despite all that, we do have quite a heavy dropout rate. We have quite a heavy attrition rate. And that's always been a big problem for the movement. And my sort of big thing of late has been to try and protect a lot of these youngsters coming into the movement. So instead of them coming in and disappearing sort of within 18 months, I want to see more of them stick around. And I know some of them go for personal reasons and some of them go for, you know, employment reasons. There's a variety of reasons, but I want to reduce, I really want to reduce that attrition rate. I want to make sure our attrition rate drops and we build retention, because I've seen wave upon wave of really, really eager, bright young people with good intentions come into the movement, and they've been either chewed up and spat out, or they end up burnt out, or they end up jaded. And I want to see this wave of bright young things stay energized and stay on top of things and not disappear through the cracks. That's my aim. And I hope that in 5-6 years, JF is still here. I hope in 5-6 years, you know, the other people that we're working with are still here. Because in the course of me doing the show this week on the alt-right, I mean, I started it with Tara McCarthy, and we've had many guests, we've had many different commentators come on. And after 57 shows, I'm the only person who's been there since show one.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to stop that. I want to retain people. I want, rather than, you know, I want to retain people. So, yes, we have this wonderful spurt of new people. We have all this new blood. But the important thing is holding on to those people and not letting them disappear.
Yeah, and it is tough. I mean, well, compared to, say, 20 years ago, you know, one thing is there are venues that just simply didn't exist. And if somebody was a young, talented person or an old, talented person, 20 years ago, what were they going to do? You might start a website and hope people would read the articles you type. But of course, now, you know, there's YouTube came along. But even at first, YouTube, there weren't live casts or live streams. And the videos were limited to 10 minutes or so. So a lot of the vehicles that we're using now weren't even available before. So there's that. But yeah, there is a burnout factor. And even I keep plugging away, but there are days where I feel burned out and, you know, think, is this what I signed up for? But, you know, what we're doing is very important and we're making progress. And so it's certainly no time to be discouraged about anything.
No, I'm not discouraged at all. I mean, I'm energized by the state of the movement at the moment. I'm happy. The only thing I wish there was a premier nationalist party in the UK that could sort of sew up support for the movement in the UK. Because the thing that we lack here in Britain is we used to have a nationalist party that was at the center of everything. We used to have a party that was the biggest by far, that took all the votes, that took all the good people, that had 14,500 members. And that was, of course, the British National Party. But we've lost that now, and we don't have that uniting force. And instead, we have so many small parties, so many micro parties, you know, with less than 100 people in them. And I want, I know this sounds a bit mean, but I want that to end. I want those small parties to kind of disappear. And I want us as a movement to be united in, you know, well, obviously they're not all going to disappear. You're never going to get a perfect situation where everyone who's involved in the movement just shuts up their own little shop and gets behind something bigger and more productive. But we do need to concentrate the vast majority of our people behind one cohesive electoral force, because unfortunately, if we don't do that, we are going to be facing a problem that we have now of a, you know, 15 little tiny splinter parties all trying to carve out a niche, and that's wholly unproductive for the movement.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's an issue that I was talking about on Stormfront, I guess the past couple of days. I don't think I've addressed it on this show yet, but I recorded a show with Professor Richard Sloan that will be aired tomorrow. And this is dealing with the new round of protests over a shooting of a young, unarmed black man, this time in Pittsburgh. And I don't want to go into a lot of detail because the whole show, most of the show tomorrow, is going to be devoted to that. But I was just bringing it up, A, as a teaser for tomorrow, but also in case you have any curiosity about it or have any comments about it, if you're familiar with it.
I actually haven't heard about this.
Yeah, well, just to summarize, there was a drive-by shooting, and the police were called. This was in a black suburb of Pittsburgh. There was a drive-by shooting, and the police were called, and they found a vehicle with that description and with bullet holes in the back window. I think that's where the bullet holes were. So they stopped the car. They were processing the driver, and excuse me, everything's going crazy here. They were processing the driver, and then two youths jumped out of the back and started running, and one was shot dead. And of course, the one who was dead had the emptied clip of a 9 millimeter clip, and of course, 9 rounds had been shot at the original shooting 13 minutes earlier, and yet, so I mean. And there were 2 handguns in the car. Mm. And so, you know, 3 seconds earlier, these people were armed, although maybe out of ammunition. And yet the mainstream media is going with the narrative unarmed blacks. Well, if they were unarmed, it was only for 3 seconds. They had been armed 3 seconds earlier.
Well, the media are just absolute dogs. I mean, this is sickening. This is exactly the kind of damaging narrative that puts communities at risk, that puts police officers at risk, that puts white people at risk, because the narrative is clear.
And puts black people at risk. These guys had just shot a black person.
Yes. It puts everyone at risk, because ultimately, whether these media talking heads like it or not, there is a huge problem with black gun crime. There is a huge problem with black on black gun crime. And when the police get involved in those situations with black on black crime, it often ends in violence. And the fact of the matter is, police are especially twitchy with people from those communities in America, because the police know that there is a high likelihood that they will be open fired up, that people will open fire on them. This is a matter of protection. And when you see a gang of people who have been engaged in some kind of shootout and they are all armed, they have weapons in the car, what do you expect the police to do? But the media want to play up this whole idea that white cops or cops in general go out looking for black people almost as if they're going to murder them, almost as if it's a lynching, as if police are cruising around just looking to gun down young black males. And by spreading that damaging and false propaganda, they are stoking the fires of extreme racial tension that leads to the kind of riots we've seen over the past 18, 24 months, that leads to white people being attacked, as we saw in Detroit, that leads to black people feeling as if they need to hate all white people. And this creates this damaging and wholly toxic division within our society.
And unfortunately, I mean, there have been demonstrations going on day after day. This happened on Tuesday, so they've been going on through the weekend, and I guess yesterday was the funeral of the young man, who, according to all descriptions, was a good boy. And if
didn't do
that's
nothing.
The case, huh?
Didn't do nothing?
Didn't do nothing. Well,
didn't do
all he did
went
was,
to church.
All, okay.
Was at church every week. Church every well, week, about to turn his life around. Good boy.
I know. And I'm just for the sake of argument, I'm going to go with the narrative that he was a good boy, and then ask, what is it that turns that? Why a? What is it that makes a good boy from a black background? He's a good boy in May, and then in June when school gets out, he's doing a drive-by shooting. What is it? That's one question. If they're going to push this good boy narrative, then we have to ask that. And of course, then the other thing is, you know, you've got these protests, which fortunately have not become violent riots. Okay, so I'll give them credit for that. They have been very disruptive because they block traffic even on major highways for hours at a time. But the mayor of Pittsburgh and the local congressmen are joining in the demonstrations, right? And so are you telling the police and are you telling the criminals that if you can run faster than a policeman, you're above the law? Because you're not, you know, the police can't shoot somebody just for running away from a crime scene. Right? If he's, you know, might be unarmed. He might be unarmed. And now they had every reason to suspect that somebody who 13 minutes earlier had been in a drive-by shooting was armed. They would have every reason to believe that. But in this case, no, they had left the weapons behind 3 seconds earlier. And so, you know, now you've got mobs calling for this police officer to be tried for first-degree murder.
Well, here again, yeah, there's not really much I can add to what you've said, to be honest, Patrick. I mean, the media are desperate to have this police officer ruined. They're desperate to essentially hold him up as some kind of criminal. But the fact is, if you are driving around with people who are taking part in drive-by shootings, who are going out there to kill people, you are not some innocent good boy. You are not some, you know, little grade A student who just strayed a little bit onto the wrong side of the tracks. You know, you didn't go out there and get caught, you know, having a drink in public or, you know, partying a little bit too hard after your exams. You're going out there to kill someone. Mm-hmm. And if you're involved in that kind of criminal act and you get shot, I'm sorry, but the fact of the matter is, if you play the game, you have to be willing to take the consequences. And once you stray into the territory of murderous behavior, drive-by shootings, you are essentially taking your criminality to the level where it is literal life and death. And if you are going out there playing by those rules, you cannot complain, nor do you have the right to complain if you end up dead on a mortuary slab. Because unfortunately, you signed up to those rules.
Right. If the mother was saying he was a good boy, he made a mistake, this is a tragedy, that would be one thing. But then to say it's not his fault and he's actually held accountable, that's the same. Okay, cool. Back out.
There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
National Bugle Radio, and we were thinking about what we're going to do during the breaks. There's a couple of issues to get to. One of these days, we should probably just do a review of a lot of British sitcoms from previous decades, because we might have that in common. There was certainly a lot of good. The British are really, really funny. Did you ever notice that, Mark?
I think we are funny, but I would definitely say we have a sort of darker and more subtle form of humor.
Well, I mean, Blackadder, Rowan Atkinson, that's certainly dark, especially the episodes that took place in World War One.
Yeah, that was the last episode of that was very moving.
Going over the top.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, going over the top, Europe. There's a lot going on in Europe. And so the question is, are the Europeans waking up on time? And I heard you, I think, talking to Jean-Francois, and you were mentioning the French World Cup team, which might as well be an African team. I haven't seen their team this year, but that's certainly been the trend over many years. The Swedish team had at least a certain number of blacks, and I don't know if it's so much Middle Easterners, but certainly blacks. Are the Swedish waking up? There is a surge of support for the Swedish Democrat Party, which is a nationalist party. I think you could call it a nationalist party, certainly an anti-immigration party. They've surged and are now way out in front, or considerably out in front of the ruling Swedish, what do you call it, the Social Democratic Party.
Yes. I think that's great news. I mean, I've met some of the people from the Swedish Democrats. They used to come over when I was in the BNP and come to our conferences and festivals. They were decent people. They were the sort of people that you can get on with very easily. They were smart. They were well-dressed. And I wish them all the best. And I know that some people like to split hairs at times like this and sort of say things like, well, you know, they're a bit soft on this, or they're not perfect on this, or, you know, if only they tightened up on that. But I don't really follow that. I think it's a major step in the right direction. Now, if we all sit around waiting for perfection or the party that meets every one of our stringent, you know, 101 standards, we'll never get anywhere. We need to unite and we need to get behind parties that are pushing the discourse in the right direction. Now, essentially, if a party is called racist, if a party is called homophobic, if a party is called all of those silly, meaningless buzzwords by the left, you can pretty much say that that's a party worth voting for. And I'm sure that the Swedish Democrats, they were, back when I knew them, are called all of those things, which essentially means they are a threat to the system, the multiculturalists hate them, and they are currently a very powerful group because the public's rallying around them because large number of Swedes are sick of mass immigration and multiculturalism. And if you look at the worrying words from people like Jean-Claude Juncker, the president of the EU, and Emmanuel Macron, these people are saying that over the next 30 years, between 150 and 200 million African migrants will be coming to Europe. Now, I think they're lying. I think it's going to be a lot more. Because over the next 30 years, Africa's population is set to double. Mm. Projections are saying that Africa's population is going to go from 1.28 billion to 2.6 billion. Now, if that population trend actually is seen through, if that actually happens, if the trends continue and we get that doubling of the population in Africa, where are those 1.3 billion people going to go? Because they're going to be in some of the most impoverished, some of the most famine-stricken, some of the most disease-stricken nations on the planet that are already long past breaking point. These are broken nations. Where are these people going to go? Well, they're going to be coming here. So to suggest that at the moment, when there's 1.28 billion people in Africa, there is this massive wave of refugees. And if you're talking about doubling that number, I can think that official estimates are saying between 150 and 200 million. I can imagine it could be up to double that. It could be double that. Because if Africa's at breaking point now, when it doubles its population, it's just going to be an endless stream of people.
Well, I did a podcast or a show about a year and a half ago with Andrew Anglin of the Daily Stormer. And it's actually one of the favorite ones I've ever done. It was, I think Andrew had been up all night or something. And he's a person with a lot of ideas. He's interesting and he's kind of funny. And we were talking about what could possibly happen in Africa. And that's what I want to get to, that because it is a massive issue for humanity. Past the great.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to National Bugle Radio. This is our daily show. We've been doing this daily show since October of last year. Before that, I was doing it as a podcast, but Farron, who has the Saturday show, was playing it also. He was playing my podcasts on a weekly basis. And it was back then, about a year and a half ago, that I had Andrew Anglin on. And, you know, Andrew is somebody who's smart, but he's funny, and he is very uncensored, I would say. That's a funny thing to say, because in a way, he's the most censored person ever. He's censored by the authorities, but he is unself-censored. How about that? And so we were talking about the African population crisis. It's a crisis for humanity, because not only are they set to double in the next 30 years, but they're set to double again by the end of the century. So they would be going up to about 4.7 billion, which would be about half of humanity, which is really impossible. How can that happen? It boggles the mind. The rest of the world is on a trajectory of getting its population under control. And of course, whites and some East Asians are already in decline. But, you know, his solutions were outlandish. So he talked about killer robots. He talked about genetically engineered viruses. He talked about letting Africans revert to cannibalism. And all of that was outlandish. But the point I wanted to make by having him on is that what he was saying, compared to what you get from The Economist magazine, compared to what you get from United Nations studies, at least he was talking about the real problem. And they were saying things like, well, yes, the population's going to double. They'll have a very youthful population. Maybe that youthful energy is just what Africa needs to get out of its cycle of poverty, which is the most ridiculous thing ever.
Well, I think that the interesting thing we were talking about in the break about China moving into Africa and what that could spell, that's certainly going to be very interesting, because China's investment in Africa, we'll see if that does manage to do anything for Africa, which I don't think it will. I think Chinese investment in Africa will literally just be to strip mine it of all its resources, and they'll do so in a very business-like and efficient manner, but it won't leave Africa with anything.
It's who knows? They're in there now, and of course, Europe colonized Africa. And on the one hand, you could say, well, they transferred a lot of technology and put in place rudimentary institutions, you know, government institutions and whatnot, infrastructure, things like that. And what's, well, as a result, African, say, life expectancy went way up, death rate went down, the child mortality rate went way down. And normally you'd say, oh, these are great things. But if you have a country or a population that has no, doesn't seem to have any ability to control its own population growth, you're just getting this population explosion. This is, and the response of post-colonial Europeans has just been, whenever they have a crisis that normally would keep their population in check, you just pump in resources, pump in food. And, you know, that makes our people feel better about not having to see starving Ethiopian children on TV. You know, think back to, if you're old enough, you can think back to, what was it, Aid for Africa, or, you know, there was both British and American concerts organized to save Africa. In the 1980s, people will remember that. But long term, not only does it do nothing to stem this massive problem for civilization, which is the African time bomb, and nobody, I mean, except for Andrew Anglin, nobody's got any solution to it.
But they might have got some solutions.
Okay. Let's hear your solutions, and I'll talk about my Chinese ideas. But
well, I was reading some comments by one Professor Stephen Smith, and he's a bit of an expert on population growth in Africa and population movements. And he was someone who was referenced by Emmanuel Macron when Emmanuel Macron gave a rather enthusiastic interview saying that the destiny of Africa and Europe are intertwined, and, you know, the destiny is the same, essentially. Well, I hope the destiny of Europe isn't to be like Africa, because if it is, we're screwed. Because I can tell you one thing, the destiny of Africa is not to be like Europe. That will never happen. So if the destiny is the same, then that's rather grim for us. But the interesting thing about what Professor Stephen Smith said, and he said this was quite uncomfortable, was that he'd come to the realization that Africa was in the mess it was in because of Western aid. Mm-hmm. Not in spite of Western aid, not that Western aid had done wonders for Africa, but because of Western aid, Africa was in a mess. And that's essentially true. You see, what we've got in Africa, we've got a nation that can't feed itself. We've got a nation that cannot attain enough clean water to keep people well watered. We've got a continent where the vast majority, I think the 20 most HIV infected nations are all in Africa. We've got a continent where there are some of the highest and most heinous crime rates, the highest rates of the most heinous crime, should I say, are in Africa. So it's lawless, it's disease infested, it's poverty stricken, there are regular droughts, regular famines, people can't feed themselves, there are regular, very, very violent, very partisan civil wars which result in absolute atrocities on an unprecedented level. And you have all that in one continent. Now, that's constantly reducing the number of people in the continent, on the continent. But instead of us letting nature take its course and letting these people reach some form of natural balance, some sort of equilibrium, we go there and we give them more money. We go there and we give them medical care. We go there and give them all of the infrastructure, all of the education, and all of the welfare that we can afford to give them. And all this does is ensure that their population carries on growing. But right. that compounds the problems, because mm-hmm. if you've got 1,000 people living in an area and they're impoverished, they can't feed themselves, there isn't enough water, and there's rampant disease, and you give them enough aid to double their population, you've then got twice the problems. The famine is worse than it was before. The drought is worse than it was before. The spread of disease will be worse than it was before. The poverty will be worse than it was before. And this is a very interesting point. And this wasn't made by me. It was made by he's a liberal thinker. He's someone quoted by the president of France. But he said it's an uncomfortable truth that mm-hmm. there have been no success stories in Africa. And quite simply, the solution to Africa is to let nature, to let the African people, to let African nations embrace their own destiny, find their own equilibrium. Because in 30 or 40 years' time, things will have settled themselves out. Mm-hmm. But if we don't let them settle themselves out, we don't need killer robots or anything crazy. All we need is to allow these people to operate under their own steam. Because every time we go in there with this liberal altruism, with this, we need to help these people, we actually only make their problems worse. Mm-hmm. We take a country that can't feed itself and we double the population. So now there's even fewer resources.
And that's absolutely been the case. Now, Andrew Anglin, he mentioned that, just let them go their own way. Well, then he said, of course, what does going their own way mean? And if you look at Africa's history and even its present, you know, you're talking about just massive war and violence and cannibalism. And, you know, Andrew had written in an article. This is why I had invited him on the show. He wrote an article asking when is – I mean, he's very rude, of course, in his articles. But the headline was, when is the United Nations going to step in and cull Homo erectus in order to preserve the African elephant? But, you know, the thing is – he's very rude.
Right? I'm probably going to get arrested for just laughing at that, you know.
That's why I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing at you laughing at that. But the point is that there's not going to be any megafauna left. All of the African megafauna, all of the biological diversity is being wiped out and is going to be wiped out. And Andrew was saying, I think it would be sad for the Africans just to be eating each other and killing each other. And you know, he does have a point there. It would be sad. Now, obviously, European tutelage, whether it's in the form of colonialism or colonialism might have been better, but I don't know, but it certainly post-colonialism hasn't worked. Colonialism probably wasn't so great either, who knows. But part of that is, you mentioned the European altruism and, you know, not wanting to egalitarianism, not wanting to say, well, Africans have to do things this way, they can't do it that way. European or white involvement really has been, it's certainly not the solution, that's for sure. Now, the Chinese are in there. I remember years and years ago talking to Benjamin Fulford, who comes on the show from time to time, and he said that he thought, well, yeah, we should just, the United Nations should just send a bunch of Korean technocrats and let them run Africa. And I thought that was horribly racist at the time. But, you know, the Chinese are there. And one thing about the Chinese is they imposed for three decades a one-child policy on themselves, because they thought the only way we're going to get out of our cycle of poverty is to get our population under control. And so they did that for an entire generation, and with great success. Now, of course, their human stock is different. Their innate capabilities are different. But they did, through very draconian measures, got their own population under control. Now, what I say, I know if the more and more the Chinese penetrate into Africa, the more you've got American generals and corporate leaders who are complaining and saying, oh, you know, this is a strategic threat and whatnot. And then, of course, there are also skeptics who will say, well, the Chinese are just in it for themselves. Well, even if the Chinese are in it for themselves, if, you know, they're sending millions and millions of Chinese to Australia and Canada and America. I don't know about Europe so much, but and even to Japan, they're kind of overrunning countries. If they want to be sending a lot of people out, maybe they should be sending lots and lots of people to Africa. Run those countries, you know, sooner or later, if they send enough people, they probably will be running the countries, even if it's, you know, from the shadows. And if they do good for the continent in terms of keeping the population under control, because they have a moral position to do it, because it wouldn't be hypocritical for them to impose draconian population control measures. It wouldn't be for them, because they did it to themselves. And if they were to benefit from it, it would be very rightly deserved. That's basically my editorial, that if the Chinese want to control Africa, I don't think anybody should say no. That I don't see how that could be anything but an improvement over the trajectory they're on, or even the trajectory that they would just, you know, let them drift. I can understand that, but I bet that having Chinese leadership there, Chinese intervention there, would probably be a good thing. That's my editorial for the day.
Well, I think if the Chinese did go there, I think they would deal with Africa in a very dispassionate and cold way. And mm-hmm. I think that's exactly what Africa needs. Mm-hmm. Africa is not some, you know, world of magic. It's not some wonderland where you go there and it's peaceful and it's
Wakanda.
Yeah, it's not Wakanda, and it's certainly not, you know, peaceful indigenous tribes who all get on with each other. It's a very warlike, very violent place. And I believe quite strongly that if you're going to go to a place like Africa, you have to be absolutely objective about the kind of place that Africa is. And I think if the Chinese went into Africa on a mass level, they wouldn't be going there with that white guilt, with that altruism, with that let's make sure that every last one of them lives, let's make sure we double their population by, you know, 2050. They're not going to be doing that. Right. They're going to go there with the same kind of mindset they have for their own people, where they had a one-child policy. When they had a problem with population growth, they instituted a one-child policy. And I think if they went to Africa, they would look at it with a very different mindset to the way the West has looked at it. And I think that would actually help Africa. Yeah, the only thing that the Chinese would do is they would be extremely territorial. They would strip mine everything from Africa for the good of the Chinese. And I think in terms of actually improving Africa in the long run, I think there would be some improvement, certainly with the population issues, but I don't think the Chinese would be leaving the sort of lasting structural development that the Western world attempted to leave. Obviously, much of that now lies in ruins, mm-hmm. but I don't think the Chinese would be quite as gracious and kind as the European.
No, I don't think they would be. But I think for humanity as a whole, and for Africans themselves, I mean, a future of 4.7 billion Africans by the end of the century, that's a very grim future, not just for the world, but for Africa too. So
it's a grim future because there are 25 African nations which have an average IQ of 70 or less. Mm.
Indeed. Well, we will be back after the break with more of this philosophical discussion.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network.
Back to National Bugle Radio. This is our Monday show with Mark Collette, and we only have a few minutes left, but before we go, I don't want to let you go without first asking you, I'm sure you've seen these images of crying babies on the southern border, and how horrible it would be not to set national policy based on trying to keep children from crying.
I'm actually surprised you asked this.
National priority is to prevent children from crying, right?
I'm actually really shocked you asked this, Patrick. When you said you had to ask something, I thought you were going to say something about the World Cup.
The World Cup. Yeah, Iceland lost, so I'm not as.
Are you out now? Is that it? You're done. Your investment's over.
Iceland. Well, okay. But you can talk about the World Cup too if you want.
No. I'll obviously talk. Yeah, I think this is, again, we discussed this on my show, and if people want to hear some really good commentary on this, because you only got a few minutes left, you should hop over to my YouTube channel and hear me discussing this with Patrick and with Richard Spencer. Now, the very interesting thing that we did discuss about this was the fact that essentially policy is being made on the issues of feelings and on the issues of these children are crying. And that is very, very illustrative of the way the left do things. The left are very, very good at essentially taking something which has no factual basis, but is simply based in or on the idea of feelings and feelings alone, and taking that and running with it. So that is the way they influence policy. And we said on my show that this is actually, although it's not the way policy should be made, it is the way people think. People think in terms of emotion.
You were making that point, and it really didn't sink in with me until, you know, over the weekend. And it's why on earth would people be talking about children crying on the children crying so much? Why should that be such a talking point? And it is.
It's because you're a man, you see, and you're obviously a masculine male, not a feminine male. And the fact is, most people don't think with facts, because we have, obviously, 50% of the population are women, and they are naturally more emotional and more emotionally charged than men. We know that. That's a fact. But we've also seen the massive feminization of men. So we have this society that is slipping into this female emotional mindset. And because of that, because of the way our society is going, because of the way it is being twisted, when issues come up, people can't look at them in a dispassionate and factual manner. They are driven by this emotion. So the idea of a crying child is enough to swing public opinion and to make policy. And unfortunately, as we said on my show, Donald Trump absolutely fell for this. Donald Trump allowed himself to be manipulated by the press yet again. He signed another executive order. And there are people saying, oh, you know, this is just his 4D chess. He knows what he's doing. Unfortunately, I see all this quite differently. I see a man who is being played and who is allowing policy to be made on the back of emotion. And again, I should imagine that Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner mm-hmm. weren't far from this.
Yeah, and of course that Syria bombing was on the basis of emotion. It was on the basis of children having water poured on their heads. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show again, Mark. And I look forward to next week when you come on, and also Wednesday when I'm on your show, and Friday when you're on Dr. Duke's show.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'll see you on Wednesday.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective, and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.